Now, for this reason, we're about to have lunch after this session. Lunch has been prepared. It's free, and we want you to come. And after we finish lunch, while we're having dessert, would be cookies or whatever they've got, we're going to do Q&A. So if you have a question, don't put your name on it, but if you have a question that you'd like to have discussed over there, why, write it on this card. If you don't have a question, but you have a piece of advice that you think might be helpful to other couples, won't you write that? And I'll read that, and that'll be good. So, again, that's going to be at the conclusion of lunch in just a few minutes. If you raised your hand a while ago because you have three children still at home, would you raise your hands again? Good, good, good. Okay. How many of you are doing some form, you're involved in some form of home of those couples now, some form of home renovation right now? Now raise your hand. Okay. We're down to three. How many of you who are doing some form of home renovation are doing, have recently purchased paint? You're doing some painting in that home renovation. Really? Okay. I thought that would get them. Do what? Okay. How many of you are about to paint? Okay, put your hands down. Everybody's about to paint. How many what? I can't hear. Yeah, I'm just talking to the people with three kids. Okay. There are three. There were three who involved paint. Up here on the front. Uh-huh. Okay. We'll try that. How many of you who have three children at home, are involved in renovations, are involved in paint in renovation, and are going to be using green paint? Blue paint. Oh, we got two. Yellow paint. Red paint. What's another color? Gray paint. Oh, everybody's going to say white. Okay, white. White paint. Now, I knew that, of course. Helps a lot. Okay. We'll. Oh, that's a good idea. Okay. Who of those of these people that's doing renovations have three kids at home? Which of you has the youngest child? Anybody got one under one? Under one. Under two? I think we did it. Congratulations. There you go. Okay, that was tough. It's good. It's good that, you know what, I don't think that, y'all are kin, I don't think that would have worked out anyway. Okay, all right. Now, let's talk about intimate. This will be our discussion for our last session. Sometimes in seminars, I talk about sex, and Cindy and I, a few years ago, were at this event, and I had been asked, it was an event for marriage, and I was asked to talk on this subject, and Cindy and I were getting dressed in the hotel room there before it happened, and I said, Cindy, this is really hard. I mean, to talk about sex in front of people like this is kind of embarrassing. I said, can you think of anything that'd be harder than speaking in front of people about sex? And she said, yeah, being the wife of the man who's speaking in public about sex. I thought that was pretty good. That was pretty good. Bob and Sarah have been married for 7 years, and pretty good marriage, not always good, and sometimes it's a little bit rocky. And the truth is, Sarah is in the hospital, and her husband is by her side, and she's not going to make it. She's dying in that bed. And so Bob was beside her bed, and he said, "Just lay still, honey, and everything's going to be all right." And she said, "Bob, I need to tell you something." "No, no, save your breath." "No, you don't understand. I've got to get something off my chest. There's something that I really must confess to you." "No, it's all right. Whatever. Worry about it. I love you. Everything is fine. Just realize." "No," she said, "I've got to confess this. I've got to tell you. Bob, there was somebody else. I've been unfaithful to you." Said, "Darling, I know that. Why do you think I poisoned you?" All right. I set you up. I'm sorry. Okay. Look, here's how I want to go about this session on intimacy and marriage. And I'm not going to talk about the mechanics of sex, and I will try very hard to be appropriate and not to say things that unduly are embarrassing. But I think this is a good atmosphere to talk about this subject. And so if you'll bear with me, I will promise to do my best to be appropriately discreet while still talking about the subject. There are 10 things about intimacy and marriage that you cannot change. I'm sorry, 5 things you can change and 5 things that you cannot change. And I'm going to go through that list with you. I want you to bear in mind that the Bible presupposes sex in marriage. It is a sexual relationship. As a matter of fact, when you get to Romans chapter 1, where Paul, the apostle, so clearly condemns homosexuality, he makes this interesting statement. He says that they left the natural use of the woman for that which was against nature. Isn't that interesting? So in marriage, sex is sort of a pre-assumption that it's a sexual relationship. As a matter of fact, when you get to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the first couple of verses, he says, to avoid fornication, you know what fornication is. You know the difference between fornication and adultery? Fornication is an umbrella term that means sinful sex. So underneath that umbrella, I mean, you think about all different bestiality or adultery or homosexuality, all of these kinds of sex before marriage, all of these things would be under the umbrella of fornication. It means sinful sex. The only sex that is approved by God is between two people who are scripturally married to one another. That's approved by God and assumed by God. To avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife. The difference, by the way, between fornication and adultery is that adultery is fornication when people who don't belong to one another have sex. They're not married to one another. They have sex, and a marriage vow is somewhere broken. So it could be that a man who's married has an affair. That's adultery. Or it could be that I divorce my spouse unscripturally and I marry someone else that I don't have a right to. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9. If you wonder about how Jesus said that, that's your verse. Matthew 19 and verse 9. He called that adultery. All right. Let's talk about 10 things. Here are 5 things in reference to intimacy, in reference to sex, that you cannot change. You can't change the fact that all marriages have a frequency imbalance. It's very difficult, I think, when couples get married, for a young bride to realize that her husband wants sex all the time. He wants it with great frequency. Didn't we just do that? You want it again? I think we just did that. What does the Bible say about this? I mean, is there anything in the Bible that says this is an appropriate for marriage, frequency for intimacy? What is it? And the answer is yes, but it isn't a number. It isn't about how many times per month. Instead, what it is 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2. Let the husband render to the wife the affection that's due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. He's talking about intimacy. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another. except with consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and then come together again, because Satan will tempt you for your lack of self-control. What's the answer? The answer about frequency is that when you got married, you gave your body sexual, your sexuality to your spouse. You forfeited that. To what degree is that true? The King James says, translates it this way, don't defraud one the other. You know what defraud means? Defraud, I was in a courtroom one day a few years ago where I was preaching some guys that were doing drugs, and they broke into the church building in the middle of the night, and they stole a couple of microphones or something, and the police got them, and they were in a court of law. I was invited to come to testify that I had authority to admit somebody in the middle of the night, but I did not authorize these gentlemen to come into the building. That was the point. That's what I was there for. But I went a little early, and I watched a couple of hearings, and this gentleman, this was in Roanoke, Virginia. Blacksburg is not too far away, maybe, I don't know, 30 or 40 miles. And this fellow, the defendant, he'd been shoplifting. And the judge, the judge threw the book at him. He said at the conclusion of his upbraiding, he said to the man, why don't you go back to Blacksburg where you came from and quit defrauding these merchants here in Roanoke? Well, I remember this passage that used that word. I knew what he'd been doing. He'd been stealing. He'd been shoplifting. But the judge used the word defraud, and it means to take something that doesn't belong to you. And what the Bible says here about sex and marriage is that your body doesn't belong to you. It belongs to your spouse. That goes both ways, goose and gander, right? And then he says, don't defraud one the other. That means don't take what doesn't belong to you. What's the frequency of the scriptures for sex? And the answer is, sex is designed for the satisfaction of both the husband and wife. That's the answer. Now, I want to ask one more thing before we go to the second point. Why didn't God make us equal in the desire for intimacy and for frequency? I don't know the answer to that. Why aren't we identical? Why is it that in 85%, that's what I'm told, 85% of the marriages, the husband's need for frequent intimacy is greater than his wife's? So in 15%, it's not true. But 85%, by and large, that's the way it is. Why aren't we the same? I don't know. I asked my wife one day why she thought that was true about creation, that men and women were different, and she didn't blink an eye. I don't even think she looked up. She said, who would take care of the children? All right. I thought that was a pretty good answer. Okay. Two, you can't do anything about the fact that sex is not optional in his mind. Bear in mind that, of course, what's going on in him is a biological process. I mean, with him, it's not so different from needing to eat. I understand that you can live longer without sex than you can without eating, but it wouldn't be fun. He has a biological process going on that makes him need intimacy. What's sex for? I mean, why did God make sex? And you might say, well, procreation. I would disagree. I mean, I understand the role that sex plays with procreation, but I'm telling you that procreation is down on the list. Number one, it's not a close second to this. Number one, the reason for sex in marriage is to draw husbands and wives closer together. That's the answer. I mean, you talk about a man, unless he is just really old, he can't be apart from his wife for too long before the volume gets so loud in his ears. He just needs her. Well, so you have a fuss. You have an argument. You know what God did? He made us to be sexual creatures, and he put this biological mental need in this man, and he's got to do something to try to get back with his wife because he needs her. You take the Old Testament. I think this is very interesting about sex. Jacob had two wives. He was polygamous. Polygamy never worked out. A man is cut out to have one wife, never cut out to have two, and it never went well. But he had two wives, Rachel and Leah. And Rachel and Leah are arguing over a mandrake. A mandrake is a root And the ancients believed that it promoted. And because these two sisters, and they're both wives to the same man, wanted to have as many babies as they could have, they were arguing over who would keep the mandrake. I don't even know what they did with it. I don't know if they made tea out of it or put it under the mattress or what they did, but they negotiated about who would get to have the mandrake and who would sleep with the husband tonight. What is interesting is about this is that both of them just knew that whoever slept with him was going to have sex. It was a foregone conclusion. In every case in the Old Testament where you have sexual sin committed, the man is the aggressor. David and Bathsheba, Joshua and Tamar, Amnon and Tamar. You go to the book of Proverbs and you have a baker's dozen warnings about sex, about prostitution. Stay away from that. Stay away from it. In every case, every one of them is gender specific. It's about a man being instructed to control himself and not to pursue that kind of woman. When you get to the New Testament about modesty in the way that you dress, it's always gender specific. And it always is that a woman is to dress modestly. Now, isn't it right for a man to dress modestly too? Of course it is. But when you have the specifics, it's always a woman. Matthew 5:28, whoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery. Or 1 Timothy chapter 2, that the women dress in modest apparel. And that's how it always is. Your husband uses sex to reconnect. It's almost like a, I guess this is a crude example. I don't mean it to be crude, but it's like a phone charger. And that phone, you know how that is. Through the day, you know, you'll get less and less in that phone. And then at night, you've got to plug that thing in. And I would say that, I don't mean to be graphic. That's not my point. But my point is that he uses it to reconnect with his wife, that no matter how challenging things are in our lives right now, that you and I are okay. And there's a sense in which intimacy with his wife sets the ship aright when things aren't going good in his world. And here's number next. You can't do anything about the fact that sin poisons great sex. I happen to believe with all of my heart, now see if you'll agree with this, about Christians and about this subject that we're discussing right now, that God saved His best for us. And you think about all the different possibilities about men and women and sexual outlets and all different things that ways that people have corrupted this. Think, and there's a myriad of them, of all the different arrangements that people have. I'm telling you that the best in the world is a man and a wife who are married to one another and committed to one another and love each other. Right? When Caleb, our son, was a teenager, he went to work for a little newspaper for a while. He was homeschooled, and so he had hours that were adjustable. And this little newspaper in Collierville, Tennessee, and he would do sports because nobody else wanted to do it. He would do high school sports. And he and I would go sit at those high school ball games, and he would make notes and go talk to the coach, and then he would write it up and put it in the local newspaper, and they paid him some money, and that was really great. Well, one day he went and said, could I cover the Grizzlies? The Grizzlies, at that time, were the professional basketball team in Memphis, Tennessee. It was a big deal. They played at the Pyramid. It was wonderful. And the editor said, well, the big paper in Memphis, the Commercial Appeal, they cover the professional basketball, but he said, I could get you press passes. Now, you'll have to get your own photographer. I can't furnish you a photographer. He said, I can do that. You know who his photographer was? It was me. I just took our family camera, you know, and we had press passes. They would feed us fancy things. They gave us a parking place right up against the Pyramid. That's where the press parked. And we would park right next to Sports Illustrated. Are you kidding me? And I sat. I've been kicked by Shaq O'Neal. I have. I didn't kick him back either. I'll tell you that right now. And I was sitting there at the bottom of that goal, taking my little pictures, you know, Michael Jordan and Kobe and all those guys. And the ball came right by me, and yonder he came and kicked me hard. He was a nice guy, really, but the point I want to make is that Caleb and I would go in those locker rooms. It was just a fluke, you know. It was just an amazing thing that would happen. We'd go in those locker rooms, and I was always a little nervous around those guys. Caleb was not. He He would pop those questions and have his microphone and do that, you know, back in, with Michael, all those guys. Anyway, it was just wonderful. And some of those guys were players, not on the court. I mean, they had women. And everywhere you'd see them, they had women. And I remember, you know, this was I think all the different thought processes that you go through. I was going to get in my car. That's what I did about after every game. And I was going to go home to my wife. She belonged to me. She's my wife. She's my own wife. I'm her own husband. And we're loyal to one another. I wouldn't trade places with any of those guys. Not with them. I'm telling you, God saved his very best for us. And sin poisons great sex. So adultery, that's obvious. You know, you can't go to heaven living in adultery. That's what the Bible says in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9. You can't. You can say, well, it's just an affair. Well, it'll take you to hell, too. You better stop that. And it'll poison great sex with your spouse because it's got to be built on trust and it's got to be one man for one woman. So that self-gratification, masturbation in marriage is a sin. Now, let me develop this. I understand that sometimes couples will see a practical side to that, but I don't believe it. Because 1 Corinthians 7, that I read to you a while ago, said that when you married, you gave your sexuality to your spouse. You don't own it anymore. You gave it to her. She gave hers to you. And so your wife, your husband, is to be your only sexual outlet. Pornography is to break this. You need to be enticed and aroused, but by your own wife, not by some other woman. Pornography is so terribly addictive. People say sometimes, you know, cocaine is as addictive as cocaine. I think it's worse than cocaine about addictiveness because I don't think every man would try cocaine for the first time and be addicted to it. But every man, just about it, desires the female form. He's attracted. Every man, I suppose, or just about it, is attracted to the female form. And so the addictive quality is just out the roof about pornography, and that's what's happened. The use of pornography is a sin against God. Jesus said, whoever looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. Now, if you look at your wife that way, it's not lust. Lust is the inordinate desire for that to which we have no right. Looking at your wife that way and desiring her is not lust. It has God's full approval. He wants you to look at her that way. Proverbs chapter 5 says about your wife, let her breast satisfy thee at all times and be always enraptured with her love. That's a good thing. That's a good thing. Now, if you are involved in pornography, and I don't know it because I'm just a visitor, I want to encourage you to break free from it. You don't. That's not good for you. It's not good for your marriage, and it's not good for your relationship to God. So just go ahead and vow to God, I'll quit that. I won't do that anymore. And if you're successful, then pray. But you may find that in a week or two, you're at that laptop and you're hitting those, or your cell phone, and you're hitting those keys again, and you're still looking at it. And that means you have an addiction. And you say, an addiction, that's a strong word. Well, you made a vow to God you'd stop, and you didn't stop. And then what you need to do is to get an accountability partner. I've been doing this with guys for a long time. And find you somebody, not a close friend, because you'll violate that, but find somebody who you really respect, maybe a wise and good man you really respect, and go to him and say, I want you to be my accountability partner. The way that I do it is that, and it's always Christians, the guys that I work with are just about it, and we'll start out with a contract. I'll draw up a moral, it's not a legal contract, it's moral. And with God as my witness, and here's what I will do. And then he signs it and I sign it. And if his wife is in this involved, I'll have her sign it. But what it vows to do is this. Every day I will call Glenn on the phone and I will say, I'm 100%. And we use code language like that so that if you're around people, it doesn't matter. Nobody knows what you're talking about anyhow. I'm 100%. And what that means, according to the contract, is in the last 24 hours since we talked, I have not viewed any pornography. Before God, I vow to you, I have not viewed pornography. Now, he calls me every... I don't call him. See, because he needs to take the initiative. And he calls me every day. I didn't have to even, the different guys, I may have five a day, but they don't have to tell me their names. I know their voices. Hey, Glenn. Hey, how you doing? Fine. I'm 100%. Great. Keep it up. I'll talk to you tomorrow. All right? He's making that statement before God each day. I haven't viewed pornography in the last 24 hours. And we're going to do this for a year. Every single day for a year. Christmas morning. Right? Birthday. Weekends. Every day we're going to do that. And what it does is build resistance. Right? I'm that voice in his ear because he's going to have those panic times, those crisis times. Incidentally, trying to break an addiction to pornography is hardest when you feel like things are really going your way or when you feel the opposite. When you get depressed or when you think that everything's just going so super good. Those are the two major times. And if you have opportunity, or a cell phone, and that's when it's going to hit you the hardest. And that's when you think, wow, I got to call my accountability partner tomorrow. And I don't want to lie. I'm not a liar. But I don't want to have to tell him that I did it again. And so there's that accountability and the motivation to do the right thing. And the resistance. And so you build that resistance, and in a year we'll taper off and get to where you can control it on your own. That's how we do it. So, back to the point. Sin poisons great sex. You can't do anything about the fact that a typical husband never gets tired of seeing his wife without her clothes on. Now, this is hard for young wives. I know that it is. And I don't know. I think some wives feel ill at ease about this. And maybe even she would say to her husband, why do you keep looking at me? I think that you're oversexed. Let me tell you something. He doesn't know. How would he know? How would he know if there's something wrong with him? All he knows is that he just wants to look at you. You're the most beautiful creature he's ever seen in his life. And he just wants to look at you. No, a woman's not that way. Not typically. It doesn't mean that she doesn't like his body, but she's not drawn like that. I mean, you know, so if she gets out of the shower and he happens to be standing there, his whole world goes gray and his mouth is agape and he just stands there and stares at her. Right? If he gets out of the shower and she happens to be standing there, she says, stand on the mat, you're getting water all over the floor. Now, you're laughing because you know that that's right, don't you? We're just not the same. And a wife may push back against this. Maybe she'll just always make sure that she's all covered up when she's around her husband because, oh, I don't want him to see me. If he sees me, well, you know, then we'll have to spend some time, and I don't have the time. Well, that's not really true. I don't think that's true at all. A husband who is well-fed, if you please, can see his wife unclothed and enjoy her beauty the way a husband should. After all, you married this man and you want him to have eyes only for you, don't you? You know, you think about these billboard signs and you think about the women that walk around him when the weather's hot. And what you want is for him to turn his eyes and just look at you, right? Well, I think what you should do is celebrate the fact that he loves to look at you. And if he's well fed, it doesn't mean that you're going to have sex every time he sees you. That won't be the case. So, if you know you're getting ready for bed or whatever, and you're getting dressed in the morning or whatever it is, your eyes happen to glance across a mirror and you see him and he's looking at you. Don't rebuke him. Don't shame him like he's some sort of alcoholic needing another drink. Don't say, quit looking at me. What? Don't you do that. Leave your robe open a little longer or whatever. You know what? Celebrate that. Your man loves to look at you. He doesn't know why. Have you ever considered this is a God thing? What's the difference? And please forgive me for being, I don't mean to be graphic. I just want to make the point. What's the difference between a woman's breast and her ankle? Flesh and blood. But one of them fills him with passion. And the other, you know, it's a yawner. There's nothing, you know. Why is that true? And the answer isn't because your husband got creative and just decided one day that he would find some parts of your body very attractive, drive him crazy, and other parts, no. Can you hear me? Your husband didn't decide that. God did. And God plugged it into his mind, and every man in here has the same attraction, right, to the same erogenous zones of his wife's body. And so you're not going to change that. But I don't think you should want to. That, again, is because God wanted to draw husbands and wives closer together. Don't fight that. Celebrate that. All right. Here we go. Five. You can't change the fact that every woman has a sarg. Now, we manufactured that word. It's not a real word, but it's an important word. And it means sex affection ratio gauge. And it kicks in has your wife ever said this to you? I think you only love me for one thing. Huh? Right? You know what? What it is that she has this gauge in her. And the gauge is that she really, really, really wants you to love her for more than just sex. She wants you to love the way she thinks and the way that she is productive and to appreciate her and all of that litany of things. And she's right about that. I don't mean that she's right that you only love her for one thing. It's not wrong for her to want you to love the whole person. You should. It's just about how you communicate it. We talked last night in the men's session about how to love a wife. Well, take that to the bank. We talk about those flowers. You want to take that a secret? If you're going to get your wife a fistful of flowers, why don't you buy those when you, it's on a day when. And that's when you should give them to her. You're showing the whole person. When you drive along in the car, reach over and hold her hand. When you're walking along together on a sidewalk, reach over and hold her hand. You ought to flirt with your wife. You ought to talk to your wife. You want to show affection to your wife. And what I want you to do, gentlemen, at the end of the day when you're both home together, you sit down in a chair. You ought to do this every day. Or just about it. Honey, tell me about your day. And just listen to her. Just let her talk. This would be a good time, if you will, for me to take just one moment to talk about communication. Are you aware of the fact that people who study this sort of thing have divided communication into five different categories? The frivolous level of communication. Frivolous. Where I live in Alabama, it's kind of in the country. And when you get up real early in the morning, just about dawn, and you drive, and a car will go the other way past you, you have your hand draped over the steering wheel, and you do this. Now, that's a form of communication. There's a whole paragraph in that. And what it says is, good morning. I acknowledge you as a human being, and I hope you have a great day. All that's right there. Right? I don't know that person. I may never see that person again, but I've just communicated. That's the frivolous level of communication. The second is the factual level. The factual level is what we do at work with a coworker. Is this ABC? No, this is C, D, and E. Ah, got it. Thanks. Factual level. The third level is the fellowship level. Fellowship is, well, what we're about to do at lunch. We're going to sit down and eat food and we'll have conversation. And you know, you may extend yourself. You may tell some stories pertinent to the conversation. Right? Wow, when I was a boy, I did this. Or where I work, we did this. And so you're kind of letting yourself out a little bit. Fellowship level. The fourth level is friendship level. At the friendship level, you might tell things that are personal. Especially women. Women require an emotional connection from their friends. Perhaps more than men. But in friendship level, you open up a little more with that person because you trust them and you have that warm relationship. But I said all that to say this. The fifth level of communication is reserved only for husbands and wives. It's the freedom level of communication. In the freedom level of communication, you are not free to hurt that person. That's not the point. But there isn't anything that I couldn't say to my wife. Right? Your fears, your dreams, your concerns about life, death, and kids, and people, and things going on in your world, and you have that confidant, that utter trust between these two people that is true freedom. And do you have it? Now look, when it gets broken, it's because one or other has acted badly upon some sort of revelation. You know, the husband says, let me tell you about my dream. I dream one day that I'll do this. And the wife says, I think that's pretty stupid. You know, He's not going to open up like that anymore. You know, and sometimes couples, they never get past that friendship level. They kind of wear a mask. They don't want to do the freedom level because it's just too dangerous. I challenge you to reach for the freedom level of communication in your marriage. All right, all wives carry a sword. What can you change? You can change who initiates. Now, I think typically in most marriages, the husband does the most initiating for intimacy. But you ought to do your marriage a favor. You know what? Your husband connects your interest sexually in him with respect, that you respect him. He doesn't, he might not say this to you, but he cannot tolerate, cannot stand the idea that you have sex with him, but you just tolerate it. He wants you to want to be with him. That's what he really, really wants. So what I want to suggest is that not all the time, but sometimes, you initiate. So put a note in his lunchbox or in his briefcase, or send him a note. Be very careful about social media, but send him something that's very guarded, you know, I don't know what, but so that only his eyes see it, and tell him, you know, when you get home tonight, this is what I have in mind for you. He won't get anything else done that day because he's thinking about you. Now, you tell me what's wrong with that. What's wrong with that? Nothing's wrong with that. That's good. You go to somebody's house, you know, for supper, and as he's reaching up to push the doorbell to ring the bell, just get up to his ear and say, "Mister, when I get you home, this is what we're going to do." Bing bong. He's going to be sitting at that supper table, and all through the evening he'll say, "How time passes. You know what? I hate to live. We're going to have to. Right? You can change who initiates. And I'm telling you that you can do your husband and your marriage a favor if you communicate to him that I don't just put up with your sexuality. I love you, and I love your sexuality. Right? You can change, number two, the utter routine of predictability. And it's not uncommon for one person to be more adventurous than the other. Some may have a spouse, and her idea is just what accomplishes the purpose. Probably a good time for me to inject this point. Is there anything sexually that's wrong for a husband and wife to do? That's a very good question. And the Bible leaves broad leeway. Hebrews chapter 13, for example, says that the marriage bed is undefiled. I sort of think the inclination there is let the marriage bed be undefiled. But the idea there, you know, we have freedom with sex and marriage. But that doesn't mean that anything is all right. And I would put this to it. Matthew 7 and verse 12 gives you the golden rule. And so I would state it this way. Don't do anything with or to your wife that hurts her physically or spiritually or emotionally. All right? Don't do that. Now, but predictability, I think it might be an enjoyable thing. Just an idea, but for you to go, what if you got a book, a tastefully done book on the subject and read it together? I think it might be a lot of fun. And now I would encourage the wife to be the one to purchase this. Go to Books A Million or Borders, and the wife should go get it because a lot of that stuff is pornographic and he doesn't need to be looking at that. But the wife could go select a tastefully done book and you could enjoy reading it together. Sometimes, you know, you might be on a hike with your husband out somewhere on a trail and he gets a little bit aggressive with you and don't you do that. Somebody might see us. But you know what you could do? You could find a more private place off there somewhere, right? And may not be just what you had in mind, but it's what he has in mind. And I'll tell you what's going to happen is one day he'll be old and on his deathbed, and some of his last words will be, "Remember the hike?" You can change how well you communicate to your wife that she's all you need. Okay, now you got to do that. Are you doing that? I had a man come to me a while back and he said, "Brother Colley, I'm having a problem." "Well, tell me about it." "It's in my marriage." He said, "See, my wife has put on a few pounds and it's driven me to pornography." Well, he told the wrong man that, because I'm not the one to say that to it. I said, of course, you've got that backwards. See, the truth is that you've been looking at pornography, and it's made you disinterested in your wife. I know a lot of men who are married to women who are not the same shape that they were when they first married. But the man's crazy about his wife. Crazy about her. She's got everything you need. Right? Do you think that God gave Adam a cafeteria checklist when he made Eve? Huh? You know, so you reckon Adam checked off on the list that he wanted 1.57 or 5.4, 5.5 to weigh this many pounds, or that brunette or redhead or whatever, this color skin, that color. You think that he gave him all? No, no. What he did was to make Eve, and he presented Eve to her husband Adam, and he married him in the garden there. And that's that, right? Now, your wife's got everything you need. Rejoice with the wife of your youth. And you got to communicate that to her. One of the ways you do that, by the way, is guarding your eyes. Your mama had eyes in the back of her head, didn't she? Your wife does too. You go to a restaurant and you're eating together, and some flirty little thing in shorts. Well, oh, I called her a thing, didn't I? I did it again. Some flirty little thing comes by that table, you know, and you think your wife doesn't pay attention to your eyes? Let me do this. Huh? You go to the mall and you're walking in the mall together, and you go by Victoria's Secret. You think your wife isn't paying attention to where your eyes are? I'm telling you what, we go by those doors and I look across the corridor there while we're walking by it. I want to look at the hardware store. I want Cindy to watch me and know that I'm looking at the hardware store. Right? Listen to me. I'm going to make a rule. Can I make a rule because I'm the speaker? I'll just offer it and you can think about it. What I want you to do is to make sure today that your wife has all the passwords to every one of your devices. You hear me? Everyone, ladies, ask him today. I want the passwords. And then what I want you to do is to leave your laptop out when you go cut the grass. Leave it out so she can access it anytime she wants. When you're at a restaurant with your wife, I try to do this all the time. I leave your cell phone on the table. Don't say anything about it. But you get up to go to the bathroom, leave the cell phone on the table. You go into the bathroom and while what you're saying is, I'm not hiding anything from you, help yourself. And I won't even know if you've looked at it or not. That's how it needs to be. Why is that? Because she's all that you need. And that you're guarding yourself for her. I'm telling you, God saved his very, very best for us. And this is a necessary ingredient of that reality. Here's number four. You can change how you occasionally say no. Now this one may shock you. I ask you this question. Is it ever all right? I mean, I know what I've been saying to you up to this point, but I ask you, is it ever all right for a wife to say no to her husband? You better be real careful about this. I didn't like the way you said yes so quick about this. Bible says that she's to obey her husband in everything. Ephesians 5:23-25. In everything. Right? 1 Corinthians 7 says that her body doesn't belong to her, it belongs to her husband. And yet we know about how life is. And there are going to be times when, well, you know, she got up and she's going to town. She's got a long list of things to accomplish. And she stands in front of the mirror there, and she's bathed, and she's dressed, and her hair is all done, and she's doing that last little thing on her eyebrow, whatever that is. And she turns and looks, and her husband is standing there. It's his off day. And she looks at his eyes, and she thinks, oh, me. I know what he has in mind. Now, see, that's a difficult moment. Can she say no to him without hurting him? Without bruising his ego, without just crushing him? How can she do that? And it may be about, you know, sometimes it's about cycles. It's about headaches. Sometimes it's because you're a mama and you got this little baby And you know, at the end of the day, all your femininity is just drained right out of you. And you got stuff on your shirt and you don't even know what it is. And you just feel yucky. And he wants to be intimate. Is there a way to say no without hurting him? And the answer is yes. And here's how you do it. You're doing that thing in the mirror, and you turn and you look, and you think, I know what you have in mind. So you turn to him and you say, baby, I know what you have in mind, and I want to be you too. It's not a very convenient time for me right now because I've just gotten ready to go. But if you will wait until tonight at 10:30, I will. What I was going to say means the same thing is that I will make it worth your while. You know what he's going to say to that? I can assure you that you have not hurt him. He's not hurt. He's not crushed. You haven't made him unhappy. He's going to say, right? Now, ladies, if you use this, it will work, but you make sure that you don't make it 10:32, 10:31, 10:30, because at 10:30, he's ready for you. All right. He's going to think about you all day and anticipate this and what's wrong with that. Here's the last one, and then we're going to stop and break for lunch. What you can do something about is how you prepare for sex. Now, I think there's a misconception in some wives sometimes that as long as my husband reaches completion, that he really doesn't care about how I look or how I smell or whatever. And I think that there may be a seed of truth to that, but mostly it's not true. So what I want you to do is to be considerate and prepare for this in how you present yourself to your husband. And it's very true in the other way, too. I was speaking at an event a few years ago, and it was kind of a Coliseum thing, and I was just one speaker among many. And I was talking about marriage and family. And as we exited the room, I dismissed the class, and I was exiting. There's a big corridor, lots of people. And a woman said, could I have a word with you? Of course. So we sat down there. Lots of people. Nobody could hear us talking. And she said, I've got trouble in my marriage. I'm sorry. How can I help you? And she said, well, it's my husband. And you could tell she was just crushed, whatever it was. I didn't know, maybe there's adultery going on, whatever it was. She said, it's my husband. He doesn't brush his teeth, and his teeth are rotting. And when we have sex, it's very hard. I can look at your faces right now, and I can tell that you're thinking just what I was thinking. And my heart broke for this woman. Just to think about that is awful, isn't it? It's simply awful. And unfortunately, I didn't have her husband. That's the one I needed to be talking to her husband instead of to her. It wasn't there, but I tried to give her some ideas and some thoughts and encourage her as much as I could. And when we parted, I still felt just so grieved for her. So, I cannot talk to her husband, but I can talk to yours if he's here, right? Gentlemen, here it is. If you need to write it down, you can. Brush your teeth. Good mouthwash. Are you getting this? You say, well, should I? What about whiskers? A beard or not a beard? Clean shaven, which should it be? And some of you old ugly men have beards. I'm just teasing. I like your beards. But the answer is that you should get your wife alone sometime and say, honey, do you like me with this or without this? And whatever the woman says, you should do it. Do you like cologne or without cologne? Whatever she says, do it. Just do that. Take a shower. All right. What are you doing? There's no reason why your wife, or your husband for that matter, ought to have to put up with poor hygiene because God's commanded us to be sexual. So show that kind of consideration. And don't you think it's interesting that you have this one place in the world where somebody can say that to you? This is a good time. This is a good time to talk about intimacy, and I'm glad that we've had the time together. Now, I'm going to lead us in prayer, and would it be all right if I give thanks for the food now? We have some announcements. And we're going to do that too. Okay, well, thank you. Before we have the prayer, we've got some announcements. And Mrs. Colley, would you come up here? Let's do this first, and then we'll do the announcements. What it is that last night and today, we did two or three things. And this is very scientific, all right? This is, what do we call it? There you are. I'm teasing about the scientific part. But we just had fun and we've done some games. And so this is how it turned out. And so we have a clear winner for this. Ready?
Way out in the lead, Mr. and Mrs. Michael Sizemore.
All right, then. Come up here. Get this prize. All right. Excellent. Wonderful. How many years have y'all been married? 11 years. Congratulations. Okay, let's go. Good. Let's huddle up for a picture. Let's get a picture. Come back and get a picture. Excellent. Thank you. Very, very good. All right. And we're ready for the prayer and for your announcements.